Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Detective Ridiculous, where we talk about the only thing more terrifying than Warhammer, real life. Before we get started today, if you like this podcast and you want to support us, check out patreon.com/AdeptusRidiculous down in the description and get great benefits like Discord access, posters, and bloopers if they happen, as well as much, much more. patreon.com/AdeptusRidiculous. And do make sure you check out all of the wonderful merchandise at orchidape.com, including hoodies, shirts, game mats, dice, and more.
Ooh.
I rattled that off well. I feel pretty proud
of
myself.
Yeah, look at you. I didn't need to come in and save that one at all this time.
Not at all.
Things are on the up and up for you, man.
I'm a big boy.
You could almost host a podcast.
Oh my God. Imagine, right?
Imagine that. Imagine Dragons.
Radioactive.
Anyway, so are you ready for today?
You're listening to Real Heresy FM, where we play nothing but heresy, and more heresy.
No, unidentified signal, man. Come on. What about that? We are going into kind of new territory, though, because this isn't like, it's not an unsolved case, it's not weird aliens, it's not cryptids, it's not armor-wearing outlaws. Today, we're going to be talking about the Bone Wars.
Wait.
Get your jokes out now. Go ahead.
I'm not thinking like boner jokes. I'm thinking like the never ending deluge of skeleton memes in October. Prepare for the Bone Wars, Sonny.
You're thinking boys. Spooky, scary skeletons, huh?
I am thinking.
Wow,
that.
I for sure thought you were going boner jokes. I was like, all right, this is gonna take 5 minutes for Bricky to just get it out of his system, and you know. But hey, nice.
It's got a bone to pick with you.
Hey, look at you.
Hey,
we're roaming all the way back to the 1800s. For a grudge between two paleontologists that would revolutionize the field, but also maybe do as much damage as it did good.
This is just the start to the infinite and the divine.
kinda.
All right.
The two main players in this grudge were Othniel Charles Marsh, who we're just going to call Marsh, and Edward Drinker Cope, who we're just going to call Cope. In that picture, the one on the left is Marsh, the one on the right is Cope. They have classic 1800s facial hair. And in an effort to keep this below 2 hours and, you know, let Shy keep what little sanity she has left, I'm not going to go into every little minutia about their past, but we're going to try and just hit the important bits, and then we'll go from there. Marsh was born to a modest family of farmers in Lockport, New York, on October 29th, 1831. His mother sadly passed away when he was only 3 years old, and his father kind of just, he wanted him to become a lifetime farmer, kind of like dear old dad, just, you know, work the farms, do all that stuff. But Marsh wasn't really interested in working the farm. He wanted to go into the sciences. He wanted to make his life as a scientist type guy. He didn't want that farmer life. Luckily for Marsh, his uncle was a very wealthy man named George Peabody that wanted Marsh to pursue his scientific career. So essentially, he takes young Marsh under his wing and he pays for his schooling and he gets him into a nice boarding school and he gets him out of that farmer's life and into the more dignified classrooms.
Wait, real quick, is Marsh beard or mustache man?
Beard.
Beard man. Okay, left. Beard on man. Left. Okay.
Yeah. He's the sort of angsty looking guy. And Marsh would eventually get his master's from Yale, studying geology, chemistry, and mineralogy, all things you would expect from a paleontologist. And then he would study paleontology abroad in Berlin. There was this kind of hilarious quote about Marsh's personality that I saw in a YouTube video that went something like, to get to know Marsh was like running against a pitchfork. So he was a bit of a stubborn old goat, and if he had a chance to, he was going to prove you wrong or shove your mistake in your face first chance he got. He loved
so he was a know-it-all.
Yes, he was a know-it-all, and he would do whatever it took to achieve his goals, which that's going to come up again later.
Okay, so I'm sorry, real quick, I have to ask. So, like running up against a pitchfork, as in like impaling yourself, I assume.
Yeah, it's very unpleasant to get to know him because he's just, yeah, you know, he's always like, oh, nope, you're wrong, you made a mistake, you're wrong. By the way, here's the right answer, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, buddy.
Oh, so he's like, he's like the first year of Adeptus Ridiculus where it was like purely actualese. And we had to kind of maneuver around that a little bit.
Yes, yes, that's what he was doing. Actually, he is the actually guy. Yeah. So.
Huh.
Like running against a pitchfork.
Well.
Go ahead.
No, just goodness gracious. That's it's an interesting phrase. But I had to ask. DK, as we left yesterday's episode, you said an extremely boomer phrase.
I did?
As you called him an old goat currently today, you said something about like chuff or like cut yourself on something like that.
I did. I don't remember.
Crap.
I know I'll listen to it and I'll let you know. But my lexicon gets old, man, because I care took my elderly grandparents and their lexicon kind of got stuck in my head a little bit.
So I
got some real boomer ones that just kind of pop out of nowhere that I don't even know that I'm saying.
You called this man a true old goat.
Yeah, he's a stubborn old goat.
Stubborn old goat.
Stubborn old goat.
If you got any more boomerisms during today, please bring them out.
I'll try. They just pop out sometimes. I have no control over it. Anyway, our other friend in this story, Edward Drinker Cope, was just as brilliant, but at the same time couldn't be more different from Marsh. Cope was born into a wealthy Quaker family on July 28th, 1840, in Chester County, Pennsylvania. So he'd always known more of a lavish lifestyle than most and was sent to expensive boarding schools when he was younger. And according to Wikipedia, shock of all shocks, when he was young, he was kind of a spoiled brat and was kind of like constantly manipulating his father to send him more and more money. But it seemed like Cope was really kind of disinterested with like just normal schooling, and like his grades were kind of getting worse and worse. And one of the hallmarks of Cope was he had really bad penmanship. Like he never really worked on getting his penmanship better. So even later in his life, people would be like, wow, your handwriting is garbage. I cannot read what you have written down here.
Are we just going to skip past the fact that his name is called Cope?
I was wondering if you were ever going to get into like, yes, he's Edward Drinker Cope.
Okay. Copium. Like I just want to make Cope. I'm hoping Shy every time. I mean, it's way too much work, but every time he's mentioned, it's just the picture of the Pepe with the copium.
Oh,
just
with the like, copium.
Like not like 10 milliseconds long, like barely even existing.
Yeah, I somehow don't think she's going to do that, but we can dream.
You say somehow, like it isn't completely obvious that she is not going to bother.
Yeah. Also, there's a picture of his handwriting. It's, you can read it, but as you can tell, it's not great.
No. Well, I mean, like, no, yeah.
Well, it's legible. You know, one came close alongside
of the vessel. The captain ran and got a harpoon to catch one, but it was too late. They had all swam away.
Yeah.
I think more of it is his method of speaking, but this isn't a different time. If that was considered terrible, and to the fact that he was known for how bad it was,
Good handwriting back in the day. Like, you remember what old documents with proper cursive looked like. I mean, that's legible, but by the standard, it probably looked pretty gross.
I hope cursive dies in a hole.
Agreed to infinity. Anyway, excellent. So Cope became really fond of natural science, and in a bit of a hilarious move, when Cope's school marks were kind of on the downswing, his father was like, okay, so I'm going to just, since you're not that great at school, I'm going to buy you a farm. I'm just going to straight up buy you a farm. You can tend to it, grow crops, whatever. But with the farm work, you can make a stable income for yourself because your grades are terrible. So this will give you a way to sustain yourself. But Cope, wanting to pursue his interest in natural sciences, just decided, you know what? I'm not going to work at the farm. I'm going to rent this farm out. And I'm going to use the money from renting it to continue the studies I want to continue. He would also frequent the Academy of Natural Sciences and he would just haunt the halls and kind of just learn himself. He would teach himself. He would absorb himself around people that were working natural sciences and stuff like that. And at the time, this is known as being like a gentleman naturalist, where you're basically self-taught, because at the time, there aren't too many PhD programs being given in natural science, let alone paleontology.
I mean, you were put to work.
Yeah, you were put to work. Unless you came from a rich family that just buys you a farm and you're just like, oh, whatever, I'll rent the farm out and I'll just be a landlord for now. I heard from a documentary that as early as 9 years old, he was hanging around the halls of this academy and he was like drawing these really intricate dinosaur skeleton sketches. And probably from years of skillfully manipulating his father finally agreed to allow Cope to attend the University of Pennsylvania, where he would be able to study under a man named Joseph Leidy, who at the time was probably the most famous paleontologist because he had found the first basically complete dinosaur skeleton, it's called the Hadrosaur, in Haddonfield, New Jersey.
So the not as in the skeleton was there, or as in he was the first person in this town in New Jersey to find the skeleton?
I think he was the first person to find this specific dinosaur skeleton, and I think it was one of the first complete dinosaurs, because before, like, they had found like fossils and everything, but I think he found like the first almost complete one. So he was a big deal.
Okay, so because it's like he found the first ever skeleton, dinosaur skeleton, in this city in New Jersey, and I'm like, congratulations. like it's cool, I guess, but yeah. Okay, gotcha. So he's kind of a big deal.
At least a big deal. Yeah. So that's sort of the extreme TLDR on both men. And they would first meet in 1864, when Cope would head out to traverse across Europe to further his studies in paleontology. I mean, that's why he wanted to go, but also, Cope had literally no interest whatsoever in being drafted into the Civil War that was happening at the time. He was born into a Quaker family. He was also a pacifist. So not only did he not want to fight for the South, or against the South, he was also a pacifist. So he didn't want to go to war, period. So he wants to get out of Dodge, but he also wants to continue his studies. And I think specifically his wealthy father funded the whole trip because he was also like, yeah, you know what? I'd rather my son wasn't in America right now, too. Eventually, he would find himself in Germany, where Marsh was studying as a graduate student in paleontology. And since Cope was really trying to absorb himself in it, he would, of course, wind up meeting with Marsh. And they would actually really hit it off, despite being polar opposites. They really hit it off. And I don't know if it's just because they were both from America, they had common interests in paleontology, but they really, really liked each other. Like, their friendship was so deep that when the two of them returned from America, they would literally name fossil discoveries after each other. Cope would name an amphibian fossil, oh boy, I'm going to butcher this, Pichonius marshi, and Marsh would name this large serpent-like fossil Mosasaurus copanus.
Mosasaurus copanus? I hardly knew her.
Stop it. Get out of here.
Ooh, owie, my bones.
Ooh, owie, my bones. Take the bone juice.
A bone-hurting juice is unironically one of my favorite memes. That being said, speaking of bones, continue.
So, like, they were actually pretty fond of them, of each other. I think it was around 1866 that George Peabody, who is Marsh's rich uncle, decided he was going to fund the building of the Peabody Museum of Natural History at Yale. Probably with a little convincing from Marsh, because, you know, now that we have this natural history museum at Yale, you know, it needs a paleontology curator of some sort. Who could possibly be perfect to run this Peabody Museum of Natural... If only the person who funded the museum, and if only the person who the museum was named after had some relative that was just wildly knowledgeable in this field and was already now a professor at Yale. Who could... Marsh? Well, he would be perfect for such a thing.
Can cut your sarcasm with a knife.
Which I think I saw a source say that the museum actually cost Peabody in the ballpark of like $100,000 to $150,000 in 1866. Which, if I looked it up right, that's about 2 million buckaroos by today's standards.
That is quite the building.
Yes, that is a building.
That's got a little bit of that Warhammer in it. Got a little of that Victorian Gothic look into it, doesn't it?
It does have a little bit of that Warhammer in it, doesn't it?
Warhammer fans, when they see Gothic architecture, it's just like in my Warhammers.
Yeah. Cope, however, was kind of floating around a little bit. He married, he had a daughter, he'd been a zoology professor for a little bit at a place called Haverford College, but he didn't really like that much. It kind of seemed like he just got bored of it. Like, he thought it was a fine enough job, but in spending all his time teaching students, he couldn't really go on digs and do all the stuff that he really wanted to do. So he would quit that job, pick up, and move out to Haddonfield, New Jersey. Which, naturally, because he wanted to go check out and dig around in that fossil quarry where Joseph Leidy had found the hadrosaur, since there were still a lot of untapped fossils that were still there to be found. So he was like, oh, that's perfect. I'm going to go there. I'm going to hang out with Joseph Leidy, work with him. We're going to find some dinosaurs. It's going to be amazing. And at this point, Cope was like, you know what? You know who else would love to check this out and see what I'm up to? My good buddy Marsh. Let me invite him out here and show him the area that I'm looking at for fossils. This area that I'm really going to engross myself in. And we share this passion, so he's going to love it. So Marsh comes out and they kind of tour around this Haddonfield fossil bed, and everything is going great and they're still just the best of friends. Problem is, Marsh is maybe a little too impressed with the fossil bed and everything he sees there, because he goes behind Cope's back to either like the owner of the quarry or like a bunch of the workers, maybe both. I've seen both mentioned. And he bribes them to send him any interesting fossil finds instead of Cope.
Okay, so Marsh fires the first shot in this battle of the bones.
Oh, yes. In this bone war, Marsh definitely fires the first shot.
All right.
And when Cope finds out, he's naturally pissed. Like, man, come on. I showed you where I was working with Lighty and how cool everything was, and you go behind my back like that? But Marsh was of the mindset that, like, yo, all's fair in love and war, dude. I saw something that I wanted, and I was willing to do whatever it takes to get it. Yeah, you're my friend, but too bad, so sad, loser. So this is naturally a pretty big blow to their friendship, but apparently it wasn't, like, a killing blow. I guess they're still on, like, neutral terms, and they, like, tolerate each other. And one thing to know about Cope at the time was that he is a publishing fiend. Like, he is pushing out tons of published papers at an astounding rate. And so at
Cope is just a giant writer. He just really does it. Like, I'm actually pretty shocked that like he finds out he bribed them.
Yeah, he finds out either from like Lighty or maybe he heard from one of the workers or something. But he finds out and he's not happy.
God damn. Okay. And I'm surprised they're even on talking terms, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you find out someone bribes someone else behind your back, and they're,
I know, like, for me, that would have been the killing blow. I'm not associating with you ever again, but I guess the 1800s are just a very different, forgiving time.
I mean, maybe he wasn't Marsh, like, the big deal, though, and Cope was, like, excited to work under him, though?
Lighty was the big deal. Marsh and Cope are kind of on the same level at the moment.
You're right. So I guess maybe infighting would look bad underneath Lighty or something, and they didn't want to ruin the thing they got.
Yeah. But at one point, Cope is like, hey everyone, look at this really awesome fossil collection I put together. And it's this dinosaur called the Elasmosaurus. And he's already published a bunch of papers about the Elasmosaurus and all of his recreations of it. And if you look at a picture of the version Cope showed, it looks like this dinosaur has this really long tail, which is a reasonable thing to think of, like, a reptilian dinosaur, you know?
Sure.
Like on that picture, like, right there.
Or maybe like a fish.
Yeah, like, Shai just posted it. It's like, oh yeah, that, sure. Mm-hmm. But apparently, Marsh was like, I don't know if you knew this, but you put that dinosaur's head on its ass. That thing actually just has a super long neck.
Okay.
And Marsh was kind of famously quoted as saying, when I informed Professor Cope of it, his wounded vanity received such a shock from which it has never recovered and has since been my bitter enemy. Now, I've heard a couple different tellings of this story. Like, Marsh claims he was very nonchalant about it, and then Cope freaked out because he had already published this mistake. It was already out in the wild. Then there are some sources that say Marsh only saw a couple of vertebrae were in the wrong spot. And it was actually Joseph Leedy that was like, uh-oh, Marsh is onto something. Not only did you miss the vertebrae, that thing's head is on its ass, dude. And in his embarrassment, Cope tried to literally buy every single copy of the paper he published in the American Philosophical Journal to try and, like, you know, cover it up.
He was like, no one's gonna know if no one can know. So he just buys every paper.
Yep. He buys every paper he can.
That is a level of like, not really petty, but of just like pure fear that I can appreciate. Like, I can get behind that.
Yeah, I think everyone's been in a situation like that where it's like, oh no, can I just like buy all of them so no one can ever see this mistake ever?
Can I remove the brain of everyone who saw me post that thing on Facebook?
Right? So this was basically the straw that broke the camel's back as far as their friendship went. I mean, like we said, for me, it probably would have ended after the whole bribing thing, but, you know, it is what it is. And now...
So real quick, the straw that broke its back was because he called him out for his incorrect, like, dinosaur?
Yep. I mean, I guess it was the final blow, because he was like, you know, I already know that you bribed people to like work against me, and now you're doing this, and I'm super embarrassed, and you know.
Yeah. Oh,
he publicly said that.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, because on one hand, if they're working in a sense together, then they're just trying to, you know, he's just like helping out his paper.
Yeah.
But yes, if he publicly was like, my colleague is a moron. He smells bad. All right.
Yeah. So it's kind of the straw that breaks the camel's back. But also, now Lighty is kind of stuck in the middle of this rivalry, because Cope is kind of his protege. He's kind of his bud. But Marsh is also right that he kind of screwed that Elasmosaurus up a little bit, which, I mean, to be fair, and I've heard a couple podcasts say this as well, it's like, this was like early time paleontology, so it's not an uncommon mistake to make, especially when you look at that weird looking Elasmosaurus. So
that thing does look absolutely moronic.
It really does. I would assume that's a long ass tail too.
Yeah, that just... like, the first image is so much more understandable.
Yeah.
The idea that it just had this giraffe neck is,
it's crazy.
Really weird.
Anyway, so we're in the 1870s at this point, and there's word that fossils are now being found out west. And with the Transcontinental Railroad being completed, I think in like 1869, this was the perfect opportunity for Marsh and Cope to strike out towards new lands and discover a veritable gold mine of new fossils. But the problem was that during this time, heading out west was rather dangerous, not to mention obscenely expensive. Dangerous because the Native Americans were none too happy with all the expansion into their homelands. So oftentimes you'd have to employ soldiers to protect you, or like at the very least you'd have to offer these Native American tribes some sort of payment for what you were looking for in their land. Marsh would famously go prospecting out west with the help of his Yale students, since he was a professor there and now the curator of a nice museum, and get them to pay their own way. He usually took about some 16 students. In one of the documentaries I once watched, they made note of the fact that if you look at pictures of Marsh's student entourage, they all kind of look like grizzled Wild West figures. They've got cowboy hats, guns, spurs, cowboy boots, and they look like just wow, wow West, right?
This looks like Teddy Roosevelt's crew, basically.
Right? They look like they're outlaws, but really, they're just like the upper crust aristocracy families just playing dress up. Okay. Most of those people don't even like know how to shoot their guns properly. They're basically cosplaying as outlaws at this point.
I must say, okay, like, do you watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I do not.
Okay, the guy, I don't know if Shy does, the guy on the bottom left looks like Charlie Day.
Oh my god, he does look like Charlie Day, actually. I know who Charlie Day is.
And
does!
Like, I could see this being like the only Sunny in Philadelphia. It's a cover for like a season as a spoof meme.
Sure.
Just a thought process, because he looks a lot like him. So.
He does. He really does, actually. I know Charlie Day from Pacific Rim, which is a stupid thing to say, but
That is a very stupid thing to say, even if I do like Pacific Rim.
I do, too. It's a guilty pleasure movie. Anyway, Cope, however, didn't really obviously have the support of Yale. He was still in that sort of gentleman naturalist who was doing his own thing, kind of just funding and finding all of his stuff on his own dime. I believe he actually, to help finance all of his trips and stuff, he did end up selling that farm we talked about, and he also picked up a huge inheritance when his father died in 1875. Cope also had the aid of the United States Geological Survey under a man named Ferdinand Hayden. So Cope would kind of tag along on these survey trips out west to help ease the blow on his own finances. And I think he would also just kind of like, he would kind of like find these government-funded trips out west, and he would kind of just, hey, I'll tag along with you guys, I'll help you out, while also digging for bones and doing his whole paleontology shtick.
Okay, all right.
And when Marsh caught wind of the fact that Cope had found a way out west and he was now also digging for fossils out west, boy, he was not happy. He was so upset by his rival coming out west that he would actually hire men to spy on Cope. They'd give him the code name Jones for some reason. But he'd spy on Cope, keep a close eye on his rival, see what he's up to, report to me on what he's finding and what he's doing. And then Cope would do the same thing. He'd hire a bunch of men working for Marsh to keep tabs on him, what he'd found, what he's doing. They'd bribe workers from each other's dig site, try to get the upper hand, try to screw each other over. They're basically doing every underhanded thing you could think of. Like, a little later on, we'll talk about this more, it gets so bad that Marsh, and I'm pretty sure Cope does this as well, I'm not sure, that if men, for whatever reason, couldn't get a fossil out of the ground, or it was just a little too damaged, they'd blow it up. They destroy it. Don't leave anything behind that my rival can get their hands on. And to
so they don't follow the number one rule of this, which is don't use explosives near something that is extremely valuable and fragile.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, you know what? Have a good time, Cope. Enjoy the bone splinters.
Yeah, enjoy the bone, if there's even any bone fragments left. Like, they really wanted to screw each other over. And to make matters even worse in these bone wars, Joseph Leidy is also in Wyoming making landmark fossil discoveries, too. And this is where a huge problem for paleontology would occur. Because, so Leidy would be like the first to find a new, like, species of fossils, and he would classify it and he'd give it a name. But then Marsh would find a different fossil from the same specimen, and in an effort to, like, outdo and beat Cope to, like, the punch, he would publish, like, this really poorly and hastily written paper giving that a different name. And then Cope would do the same thing. He wouldn't look at anybody else's research, but he would find the same specimen, and in an effort to outdo Marsh, he would give it another name. And so now this one new species that Leidy initially found has like a million different names because Cope, Marsh, and Leidy are all giving it different names for the same damn thing. And this would actually come to be known as taxonomic carpet bombing, because it's just... Because it's just, they are just carpet bombing this thing with names.
I find this even more hilarious because I'm pretty positive that this phrase was invented later on, because I don't think they had carpet bombing at the time. Yeah, they didn't have like planes yet.
Yeah, I don't think they called it that at the time. I heard it in a documentary from a guy named Bob Baker. But then I also looked it up and it was like, I don't know if it was a dictionary term, but a bunch of different places marked it as, this is an example of taxonomic carpet bombing. And I'm like, wow, yes, it is.
I respect this level of pettiness.
Like, petty.
I respect this. But honestly, like, despite Cope including himself in all of this stuff, I really do think that Marsh is so far the one I blame the most out of all of this.
Oh, 100%. Me too. So far, this is basically Marsh's fault.
So, yeah, like, he seems like he started this. And even if Cope is playing the game,
yeah, Marsh fired the opening
first shot.
Volley. Yeah, definitely.
The first carpet bomb, one might say.
he dropped the first carpet bomb, yes. Now all I can think of is like this big bomb with like carpet patterning on it. It's like, anyway.
Well, like a 70s carpet that's like green, like yep. Bright green bathroom carpet. 70s bathroom carpet. Yellow carpet.
Yep. Yeah, Stegosaurus was named by Marsh. Cope then found it too, named it Hypsiophorus, and then Marsh found it again, thinking it was a different dinosaur, named it Diracodon. Diracodon? Diracodon? Whatever.
It appears that we've gone with Marsh's name at this point, though.
Yeah. And again, while the two would find a prolific amount of fossils and really advance the field of paleontology, we have no idea how many bones were also lost or destroyed because of their rivalry, or how many are never going to be found, but it also took decades. It took the field of paleontology decades to actually undo and properly categorize the mess they made with their taxonomic carpet bombing. And, you know, throwing out the countless names and classifications for the same species. And it was such a huge mess. It was just, look at those two pictures of,
oh
like, all of the classifications before and then all of them after.
So the entire scientific field of paleontology has been muddled due to the
100%.
Rivalry of two assholes.
Yes, it's been completely muddled by these two.
I'm assuming now we're chill. Now we figured out what's what and what's
where. In 2024, it has all been sorted out, yes.
Okay, how long did this last for?
Oh, how long did the Bone Wars last for, or just how long did it
how long
take
did the,
to...
Or, yeah, like, how long did they go back and forth and do this to each other?
Oh, until their deathbed.
Oh, my God.
Like, until their death... We'll talk about that, too.
Okay.
It lasted their whole lives.
I thought they would maybe, like, end their rivalry after, like, 20 years and retire.
No.
But, oh God. Okay, continue.
No. It was also because of all this petty infighting that Leidy was like, you know what? Go for it. You two are spending way too much money. I can't keep up with that. You're also cutthroat about it. And that's it for me. This is not the life. This is not paleontology. You guys are insane. I am just out. So Leidy just straight up dips and he just leaves paleontology. And of course, all the while, Marsh and Cope are just sniping each other in all of their publications, which again, Cope is pushing out a stupid amount of papers, which was another huge difference between the two. Like, Cope pushes out papers all the time that are kind of hastily written with like a bunch of mistakes, and Marsh is a little more on the methodical side. He tries to do his due diligence and make sure that if he publishes a paper, it's got some research behind it.
So ironically, the more ethical journalism is from the guy who's the bigger douchebag.
Yes, actually.
Oh, this doesn't end.
No. The other fallout was that, you know, Marsh started to actually publish a lot of these naming mistakes that Cope made, showing that a lot of the new finds that Cope made were, they were, oh, hey, these are already named and these are already classified, you know? Or he would intercept telegrams that Cope was sending out and he would beat Cope to the punch, basically nullifying a good chunk of Cope's work. And Cope would go so far as to literally buy a publication called The American Naturalist so he could publish with priority as quick as he wanted, as much as he wanted, as fast as he wanted.
I respect these two individuals immensely. This is this is a level of hater that is just, it's just so palpable.
Yeah, Marsh was trying his best to just completely nullify all of the work Cope was doing, and Cope was like, fine, I'll buy my own publication, and you can't do anything about it.
So, I guess an aside real quick.
Mm-hmm.
How, like, despite their immense pettiness and shenanigans,
mm-hmm.
did they actually... genuinely, through this level of pettiness, discover a large amount of dinosaurs?
Oh, yeah. So I think the final tally was something like... So technically speaking, Marsh wins the Bone Wars because he discovered, I think, I want to say 80 to 86 new dinosaur species. And I think Cope got... 50-ish?
Like actually new dinosaurs. Like,
yeah, actually new. Yeah, Cope discovered 56 new dinosaur species. Marsh discovered 80. So they discovered, and before the two of them started out, there were like 9.
Oh, okay. So oh man. What? Okay. Maybe we need to have more spite motivation in the world.
I know, right? But like when they started, there was like 8, 9, maybe 10 dinosaurs. They finished and it's like 56 and 80.
All right. These people, they basically 20x'd.
Yes.
By an exponential amount have increased the knowledge.
And mm-hmm.
So this genuinely made massive headway in the field of paleontology.
Oh, yeah. And like Shai said, one of Marsh's theories was connecting dinosaurs to birds as being like descendants, which was a far out thing to say back then. But... I mean, did that get confirmed? Just because that was like I shouldn't say that was a thing in Jurassic Park, because that is a fictionalization of paleontology. But I mean, the idea has been around for a while. I didn't realize it only just got like confirmed. Anyway, it should also be noted that at this time, Marsh wasn't really going into the fields himself anymore. He was basically hiring teams of bone hunters to go out west for him, do all the digging, all the hard work, and then send the bones back to him for like classification and all that stuff. So, now we're rolling into like 1877, and the first transcontinental railroad is expanding further and further west. And Marsh would receive a letter from a man named Arthur Lakes. He's like a freelance artist, geologist, teacher, and he's in Golden, Colorado. And in this letter, he mentions that while he was out hiking, he saw these massive bones, stuff he'd never seen before, just like embedded and jutting out of like a lake bed. And he was like, bro, I think these are like vertebrae and the humerus bones of some massive dinosaur. And I don't know if Marsh was just really busy, didn't realize what the letter was about, but he was actually really, really slow to respond. So Arthur's like, well, you know, let me send a letter to Cope. You know, and I'll send him some of the fossil samples, too. And by the time Marsh had responded and sent his men out to the area Arthur Lakes had described, Cope had already set up a quarry and was digging up bones there. And Marsh even tried to be like, hey, guys, I know you work with Cope, but can I offer you more money? And they were like, no, You can't. Cope is paying us really well, and we... No, we're good. We're good. Sorry.
Cope is paying us really well specifically to tell you to piss off.
To piss off, right? Yeah. But even though he was slow to act on that, all would not be lost for Marsh, and he would actually end up hitting it really big, because he would be alerted to an area in Wyoming called the Como Bluffs that were just rich in fossils. And he would be alerted by two men that had been working for the Union Pacific Railroad. They went by the alias Harlow and Edwards. This time, Marsh wasn't going to sit on his hands and wait for Cope to come and steal another potential dig site from him. And he was like, all right, you know what? Let's make a deal here, you and me. Let's negotiate, all right? Let me make a deal with you and let me, you know, let's get some work done here in Como Bluff. I guess it was on Wikipedia that I saw that they were like, you know, he kind of bullied us into a deal. Like, he was working so fast and he kind of bullied us into the deal. And it was from this Como Bluff area that Marsh would find, like, almost completed fossils of Stegosaurus, Allosaurus, Aptosaurus, and I think the Brontosaurus, too, although... I'm trying to remember. Shy, are Allosaurus and Brontosaurus in the same family, same thing, or it's something like that? I think they're just, like, really close. Anyway, and Como Bluff is actually where a lot of, like, the fossil destruction happened. Because, again, Como Bluff is a freaking gold mine for Marsh. This is like his baby. So like I said before, you know, he'd be like, look, guys, if you can't get the bones out for whatever reason, blow it up. Destroy it. Cope ain't getting nothing from the Como Bluffs. And like I said, I think Cope would try to do a similar thing, but at this point, Cope is on the outside looking in, while Marsh is getting all the glory from the Como Bluffs. Like I said, this is basically Marsh's golden freaking goose. And by around the 18... I think I meant Apta... One of them are the same. It's like Aptosaurus and... I don't know. Anyway...
Allosaurus. Allosaurus looks kind of like a T-Rex, just kind of.
Yeah. I think I got shorter. It mixed up. It was either the Aptosaurus looks a lot like Brontosaurus or something. There was some conflict between like the Brontosaurus and one of them. I forget which one.
Oh, there's a conflict, is there?
I know, right?
Shocked.
Shock of all shocks. But yeah, by around the 1880s, Cope barely has any of these quarries and dig sites running, and he had more fossils in his personal collection than he knew what to do with. Like, I read in a couple places that his personal collection could literally fill a house. He had exhausted almost all of his wealth trying to keep up with and outdo Marsh. But even Cope knew that, like, at this point, like, man, I'm out of the game. Like, I don't have the funds to do this anymore. And he had to look elsewhere outside of fossil digs to help keep himself afloat. So he tried getting into the silver mining business, which for a time proved profitable, but unfortunately a lot of his mines just kind of dried up and he was left back at square one with, like, no money. Meanwhile, Marsh would actually be given a very comfortable position as chief paleontologist of the U.S. Geological Survey. And from what I can tell from the sources I saw, he didn't necessarily earn this position, but more used, like, all of his connections and a wee bit of politicking to have the position granted to him. And Marsh would show that, you know, I haven't forgotten about you, Cope, because he would use his new position to continue sticking it to his rival by basically making sure that, like, he was almost blackballed from, like, teaching jobs or government jobs that he was more than qualified for. He would also take this opportunity to suggest that, you know what? I think a lot of Cope's collections, like his personal collection of fossils, were collected using government funds, and they should be reclaimed because they are government property. Unfortunately for Marsh, Cope was known to, he was a stickler for keeping receipts, for keeping proper documentation, and he was able to prove that his collection had not been collected via government funding, and he had used his own previously vast fortune to get this personal collection of bones. Cope also kept a log of basically every little mistake that Marsh had made over the years, from the bribery to underhanded dealings, published mistakes, and everything in between.
He has the Book of Grudges.
He does. He has the Book of Grudges, and he kept this little Book of Grudges tucked in the bottom drawer of his desk. And Cope would use this and the testimony of any disgruntled workers of Marsh he could find and start printing his rival's misdeeds in the New York Herald with the headline, "Scientists Wage Bitter Warfare." Like, I think he gave his little grudge book to a reporter, and that's the headline they printed with it. And so their rivalry was now front page news, and the two would continue to post claims about what the other did, or how they plagiarized work, or how they were mismanaging government funds, and how they were destroying fossils, and they were stealing, and there were spies, and there were explosives. And their rivalry wasn't really anything new to the scientific community. To the paleontology community, it was hard to not see it. But the fact that it was on the front pages now, this was really not good for paleontology just in general, because this was becoming the mainstream perception of American paleontology. These squabbling children that were accusing each other of every little misdeed under the sun, but also, like, oh my God, they're spying on each other, they're hiring spies, they're using explosives, they're blowing up bones. What is going on? Is that what paleontology is?
Is blowing up bones paleontology?
Folks,
is it good science to blow up evidence?
Right? And so paleontology started having a very negative perception to it. And it got to the point where all of this had become so awful and so negative that Marsh was demanded to resign from his position in the U.S. Geological Survey, and he would never financially recover from it. Cope would end up finally having to sell off his collection of fossils because he became very ill, and he needed the money to survive. He needed the money for hospital bills. He just, you know. And in one final challenge, on his deathbed in 1897, he asked that his skull and brain be removed from his body and measured. He then challenged Marsh to do the same when he died to see which of them had the bigger brain.
Oh my God. Okay, I've gone from hating these people to loving them.
Marsh would not accept the challenge and would pass away in 1899 at the age of 67, though. Ironically, a vast amount of Marsh's personal fossil collection was actually have found to have been acquired with government funding, and it was reclaimed while any of the rest of it Marsh donated to the Peabody Museum of Natural History.
Oh, so he cheated.
He did. He accused Cope of the stuff that he was doing.
And
Yeah,
he wouldn't even measure his own brain.
He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. Yet he passed this law that, like, oh, hey, you know, if it was collected with government funding, government should have it. And then in the end, it's like, oh, hey, by the way, that's the law you passed. You did this thing. Why would you pass this law?
All right. So, yeah. Despite the fact that they're both petty assholes, I think the bigger villain here is Marsh.
Oh, 100% the bigger villain is Marsh. Without a shadow of a doubt, the bigger villain is Marsh. But the thing is, like, one of the craziest things is, like, so they were that prolific while being that petty, right?
Right.
Imagine how much it would have done for paleontology and just dinosaur fossils in general if they had found a way to cooperate.
I mean, like, they found a staggering amount of stuff and then blew up more.
Yeah, who knows what they blew up? Who knows what we'll never find? Because, like, among their discoveries, there's Triceratops, Allosaurus, Stegosaurus, Brontosaurus. There's so many, like, iconic dinosaurs that they found. Who knows what they blew up? Or sometimes they would refill in dig sites. It's, yeah. I wonder how much they would have advanced if they could have just not been so petty and just found some way to work together.
I absolutely love this story. If I've been kind of quiet this whole time, it's because I was actually kind of enthralled by this volume of like it's just hilarious to me, the combination of the fact that they were this awful to each other, but in being this terrible. You think about Google and Apple and stuff like that, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and you think about all of like how much competition pushes each other, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I mean, obviously, giant corporations, greed, and that kind of stuff also happens, but this is like a really small scale version of just I'm a better scientist than you, and I'm going to prove it. And if anything I can't solve, I'm going to blow up. It's just, it's such like mismanagement combined with hilarity that I can't not enjoy it.
Yeah. And well, also now there's a part of me that's like, you know, would they have been as prolific if they worked together? Because like when you have that competition, oh man, you're really pushing yourself. Like you're like, I got to outdo Cope. I got to outdo Marsh. And so they're really going hard. Where if they work together, maybe they become a little more lax, maybe it takes a lot longer, so maybe the competition is kind of one of the reasons that they were able to be so prolific.
I absolutely believe that's the case. Like, okay, so like on a side, a total tangent real quick. I watched a SkillUp video recently.
No!
hey, Jesus.
We love SkillUp.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Shai had him on for a thing at some point, right?
Oh, yeah, he used to show up on her art streams all the time. He's great. I met him in person once. He's a wonderful person.
Yeah, I was supposed to meet him in person, but then I got trapped out of Canada again.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
But he made this little video talking about like the best stuff of 2023, and there was a part where he talks about the MetaQuest, like VR goggles, and mm-hmm. there's some kind of crazy stuff involving it, like the mixed reality thing where you put it on and you like do the dishes and there's like a browser tab open on the corner of your eyes, so you're watching like YouTube and stuff while doing the dishes, and it's totally it totally works. I was thinking about that, and then I was thinking about the new Apple VR thing that we kind of think is goofy but is probably going to be kind of a crazy major thing.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking, like, how far does the games industry and stuff like this go with from one to the other technological advancement, like Valve's Steam Deck and how much that's revolutionized handheld gaming?
Yeah,
like that much competition, and to think that the dinosaurs we know of nowadays are the result of two old grumpy assholes outdoing themselves. Yeah. It's just so peak to me. It's just
it
so
really
peak.
Is. It really is.
Like, I'm considering getting one of those MetaQuest headsets because I would love to paint. I don't know like how detailed it is, but the idea of painting my miniatures with like a podcast tab open. is kind of cool.
I mean, you know, you can do that still. Like, couldn't you just paint at your computer desk?
No, because then I get paint all over my desk.
Well, just put a tarp down.
There's a lot of stuff on this desk, man.
Well, get a laptop.
Having to remove all of my stuff, I'm not going to get a meta quest because it's very expensive, but...
Yeah, fair enough. I got a ROG Ally, and I love it. Like, it is, like... I love that damn thing.
I got the Steam Deck OLED because of his video on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. It is incredible. Absolutely incredible.
I love my ROG. I didn't think I was gonna, because I was like, oh, if you want to play your Steam game, just go to your computer. I'm like, now I don't, like, have to. And, like, also, like, I'm just like, hey, I don't have to be, like, doom scrolling, like, social media anymore. I can just be, like, chilling anywhere else and not, oh, man, it's great.
Hell yeah.
I love it. But anyway, we've gotten a little off topic, and, you know, Bone Wars.
This is great. I like the Bone Wars. This is
me
so...
too. Bone Wars was fun.
This is so dumb and stupid and hilarious all at once.
Yeah,
I am a fan.
Shai, do you have anything to add? Anything I forgot? Anything you wanna leave us with? Because I know Shai was also a big fan of this topic. She was like, I really like this topic too, and I enjoyed researching it and seeing just the the low levels that they would sink to outdo each other and paint the other one as an absolute buffoon in publications and stuff, so... Yeah, I had a good time. Oh, Shai is typing. Perturabo would be proud. Let's go.
He would.
Let's go. Take me home, country road.
People who like Magnus versus people who like Perturabo. Open image in tab, copy, paste.
Are we keeping
Epic
all this in?
Fail.
Wow. End it. Yep, Shai, end it.
No. No, please, no, I need to post this because it works for the situation.
I don't know that it does.
It works for the situation. I found it.
Okay.
You can't post this in the video, though. Shai will get demonetized. All right, bye, everybody.
Yeah, bye.